I am so sore.
Oh my gosh. I am so sore.
Yeah. What did we even do yesterday?
I am so sore today.
Oh my goodness. You know it. Oh man, that workout on Friday had me sore all weekend long.
All right. How does your body feel on a scale of 0 to 10? 0 being you feel awesome. 10 being you got hit by a bus. Where are you at?
6.
All right, not bad. Maybe today's the day you take it easy.
Definitely the deadlifts, heavy deadlifts.
All right, welcome to the Are You Sore podcast. This is Paul McAllister, and we are recording, as always, from Bridge Lakes CrossFit here in Cypress, Texas. We can all take a big deep breath now because the Open is behind us. We're kind of in this waiting period between the Open ending and those of us who qualified for the quarterfinals to get started. That's going to get started next week. Yours truly somehow elbowed his way into that. So it's kind of been looming over me thinking about what that's going to look like. I keep saying it's going to, I feel like it's going to be like, if you ever showed up at a party that you weren't invited to and everybody's kind of looking at you and they're like, who do you know here? I'm like, they told me I could come. I don't know. So we're going to find out. But congratulations again to everybody who made it, especially to all the 40 and overs from Bridge Lakes that got in there. We had a strong showing from our Masters athletes. I told PJ yesterday, this place is going to get a reputation that maybe she doesn't want, that it's like the old people's gym. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. So Open's behind us, quarters are ahead, but today's podcast I wanted to get in before then, because this is something that I've been wanting to do for a while, ever since he kind of approached me with the idea, because I just thought it was perfect, and we have a really unique athlete here that we're fortunate to all get to know, and I want to hear his story and I want to bring it to you guys. So Marcus is here. I'm too scared to even try the last name again. You just tutored me on it not 30 seconds ago, and I've already lost all confidence in it. So give it to me.
It's Ross Meisel.
Ross Meisel. That's the American version. He gave me the actual version, and I wouldn't try that in a million years. So Marcus, welcome to the podcast. We're glad to have you.
Thanks for having me, Paul.
You bet. So here's kind of my vision for us today. Okay. Obviously, we want to talk about adaptive athletes, what makes you an adaptive athlete. So we're going to kind of start there, but then I want to hop around a little bit, kind of go back to the beginning and get us up to present day, Marcus, and talk a little bit about what's ahead for you. So if that works for you, I'm going to just kind of try to steer the ship here. I might get distracted, veer off on exits a little bit early, but at least that's the roadmap I came up with.
It's a complicated topic, that's for sure.
It is a complicated topic, and one that I knew nothing about until I started to get to know you. So Marcus has a condition called CIDP. What does that stand for?
That stands for chronic inflammatory demyelinating polyneuropathy. So that's obviously a handful. So basically, the gist of it, my body decides to attack the outer layer of my peripheral nerves and eat them alive, mm-hmm. basically. Causes all kinds of issues with function, strength, mainly obviously, I mean, it's obviously in peripheral nervous system, which means arms and legs are mm-hmm. mainly affected for most people.
Right.
In my case, I have something that affects my autonomous system too.
Okay.
And so then you're dealing with blood pressure issues, heart rate issues, gastro issues, all kinds of stuff. So just all the stuff that you don't think about that your body runs gets a little out of whack on top of it.
Okay. And how long ago did you get diagnosed with this?
I got diagnosed in 2013. So it's been 11 years.
11 years. Okay. Had you ever heard of it before?
I'd never heard of it before. I had no idea. Initially, it was diagnosed with Guillain-Barré syndrome, which mm-hmm. is the acute version, not the chronic.
Yep.
And then since I didn't get better over time, would change it chronic, but it's very similar. And maybe some people have heard of Guillain-Barré. Most people probably have never heard of CIDP unless they know someone that has it. It's a very rare disease. Affects about 2 to 3 out of 100,000 every year.
Mm-hmm.
Most people come down in their after their 40s with it.
Right.
And they don't really know what actually triggers it.
Yeah.
For most, I mean, the only correlation I have, a lot of people come down with it after preceding sickness. But why? You know, I could have a virus and come down with CIDP, you have the same virus.
Yeah.
And nothing happens to you, right? They don't know why.
Okay. So there's nothing that, that causes this? I mean, genetic?
No, genetic relations factor.
No? Okay. All right. So I'm going to ask you one question to kind of set the table for, again, where I want to hopefully kind of build up to. And so I guess kind of in the most concise term or the concise way for you to sum up, what is the biggest challenge you face today with this condition?
Biggest challenge is I'm in constant pain, so I have neuropathy mm-hmm. pain that's everywhere in my body. Functionally, I'm limited where my strength is probably at 60-70% of a normal person
right.
in just about all my limbs. And then on top of it, I have two numb legs from the knees down. So I can't feel anything. If you were to kick me in the shins, wouldn't matter.
Wow.
I wouldn't feel it.
Wow. Okay. All right. So let's rewind. Let's get back to young Marcus. Obviously, you're not from Cypress, Texas.
No, I'm not.
Where are you born? Where are you from originally?
I was born in Germany, a small town called Aschaffenburg.
It's okay.
About 30 miles east of Frankfurt. It's in the northwest tip of Bavaria.
Yeah.
Grew up there, did competitive gymnastics okay. as a kid, all the way up to 14. I blew my ACL out, kind of retired for a little bit after that. After that, touched a bunch of other stuff, from taekwondo to played a lot of soccer. Obviously, it's Germany. You can't get around not playing soccer if you grow up in Germany. And just been generally active all my life for the most part, always doing something. And I'm kind of jack of all trades. If I see some, I'll try it.
Yeah.
So I've been always active. Then came to the US in 1998.
What brought you here?
My wife brought me here.
Oh,
that's
okay.
kind of interesting story.
She's American or?
She is and she isn't. Her mom is technically German, but she was adopted by Americans when she was six. So.
Okay.
My kids technically are 75% German because of that, because she's obviously half German.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so we met actually in an AOL chat room way back then. It was
oh my gosh.
A sheer coincidence.
Yeah.
Just started talking and then it just went from there.
That's old school.
It was before dating sites and stuff.
Yeah, all the dating sites and everything. That's how it was done originally in the early internet days.
Yep.
So gymnastics, you did that for a while. You're a big guy. Like when you think about male gymnasts, or at least the one that I see, they're not as tall as you. You probably were a lot.
Yeah, you know the interesting fact is, up until I finished high school, I was the second shortest in my class.
Oh my gosh, are you serious? Okay,
yeah,
so you were kind of a late bloomer.
Grew, you know, at 17, 18, 9, I don't know when I stopped growing, but yeah, you're right. But when I was doing gymnastics, I was small enough where it didn't affect me.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden, I just boomed up.
All right. So born, raised in Germany, moved over to the U.S. when?
1998.
So 1998. Okay. You've been here for a while. So have you always been in Texas?
Yes, we're pretty much settled in Houston. Yeah, a little over Houston, west side of Houston, then Pearland for a long time, and then
okay.
back to Cypress.
Are you an engineer?
No, I'm not. I'm actually an IT guy.
Okay. All right.
Well, technically, by trade, I'm a banker. So I was a banker in Germany. When I came to the U.S., kind of switched over to IT.
Yeah.
And while I still work in IT now, I'm kind of fall more into governance, risk compliance, and financial reporting stuff.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. All right. So you have this knee injury when you're a young gymnast. You mentioned you kind of moved over into other sports, soccer. When you got out of high school, out of college, how did you stay active? What were you doing to stay in shape?
Yeah, besides work, you know, obviously work, I did a lot of, during the summer, was a lot of pool, swim, jump board, diving. Mm-hmm. You know, that kept me active there, swimming and that. During the winter, ice skating, And then bridge between pool time and ice skating season was like inline skates. I did a lot of that too.
You did a lot of hard things.
No, it's not that hard.
Ice skating can wear you out.
I can. Yeah. And it's a pretty injury-prone sport, too. Right. I have a lot of people that blew out a bunch of stuff. Thankfully, I got lucky.
Yeah. So when did you get into, like, weight training and more things kind of like what we do around here?
I did a little bit of weight training in Germany in mid-20s with a friend of mine just to... for the lack of having other stuff to do, you know, kind of mixed it up between weight training and playing squash.
Right.
I don't know. Most people know what squash is. European version of racquetball.
Right. But,
so that's obviously very intensive on the knees too. So kind of didn't want to do that the whole time. Just mix it up with the weightlifting. But never really serious. It was just, at that point in time, was very skinny and had no muscles whatsoever. Mm-hmm. So just tried to gain some
build
weight,
some,
actually. It never really worked back then. Now I wish I could go back to that weight, but yeah.
Yeah.
So it was more on the side. It was never anything serious.
Have you gotten into American sports where he's wearing a football jersey today for a FIFA team? And there is a strong but mighty contingency of fans. And then this trivia team I've talked about on the podcast sometimes with Scott Basinger, Nicole Zunker, and then Dane Burchett, who's Kelly Burchett's husband, and his friend Corey, all of them just these rabid soccer fans. They know everything about all the leagues, and they talk about it, and they're always talking about going to the games that come around here in Houston. And one day I just had to tell them, I was like, guys, I'm never going to be interested in that. So we just, I think, need to get that right out here in the open. And they don't understand it. But so I'm always curious, as people who come from parts of the world where that dominates, if you're able to kind of gain an appreciation for some of the sports here in the U.S. that are more popular.
I'll watch some of it, and it's mainly when it gets to the end of season playoffs or whatever, I get a little bit into it. But other than that, I really don't. You know, baseball, I've been to a few live baseball games that just, you know, I'm going to just say it, they're just boring to
me. I took my nine-year-old Tanner to a high school game around here the other day. We were looking for something to do, and they were playing, and we made it about four innings, and it wasn't that exciting. There wasn't a lot of runs being scored, nor very many hits, but he was like, Dad, that was so boring. I was like, I know, but, you know, you kind of have to pretend to like it when you live in this country.
And then, you know, American football, I watch it, but I just don't understand all the rules.
Yeah.
Like, you know,
well, they're constantly changing.
Yeah, and then there's a yellow flag, and I have no idea what's going on, right? So it's like, yeah, I don't know. I can watch it, but it's just too much stoppage for me.
Right.
And then basketball is exciting. I can watch that.
Well, basketball's big in Europe.
Yeah.
I mean, so, yeah, that's probably the one that kind of brings the world together, I would think, more than baseball.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, let's kind of get caught up to closer to where we are presently. So what was going on around the time that you started experiencing symptoms for the first time, kind of leading to your diagnosis?
The symptoms actually started, I had just switched jobs and we were traveling to Calgary for a business trip, which is needed to scope out an office for the IT infrastructure and stuff. And we had just gotten off a plane in Calgary, checked our, you know, bags, dropped the bags at the hotel, and we're walking to the office, stopped for lunch, a little sandwich, and all of a sudden I just got dizzy, like real. And then not the spinning kind of dizzy, more like a lightheaded kind of weird feeling, hard to describe really. And then apparently I must have gotten real pale with it. And my boss looking at it like, what's wrong?
And this is all happening in like how
real short real period. Quick. Like, okay. I mean, just came out of nowhere. You know, and I'm thinking, I had, before we went on the trip 2 weeks prior, I had like an ear infection. So I'm thinking, well, maybe the prior ear infection and the plane ride just gave me some sort of weird vertigo or something. Anyway, so my boss, seeing me all pale, just sent me to the hotel. Like, okay, just go back and get rest.
Yeah.
Okay, that all sounded good. So I go to the hotel room, and then things just got really worse. So not only got dizzy, then I started to dry heave, pretty much dry heaved all night. got back pain all of a sudden out of nowhere everywhere. And then some extreme fatigue kicked in. And it was really hard to describe. I almost felt like I've been up for 3 days straight without any sleep.
So kind of fatigue. We're still in like the same 24-hour period.
Yeah, this is like all within like 5-6 hours.
Oh, gosh.
I mean, I could barely move. I mean, literally just dragged myself from the bed to the toilet to dry heave. And I never threw up, which was weird, too. I just dry heaving and dry heaving and dry heaving pretty much all night. And just back and forth trying to get rest. And and of course, no idea. So in the morning, my boss takes me to the ER. And they're basically clueless, let's say it this way. They diagnosed me with what's called benign positional vertigo.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, just based on really history, that they didn't really have anything else to go on. Didn't really have anything to give me, but made the recommendation I probably should fly back home if I can at the earliest convenience. And my job pulled a few strings, cut me a flight back out that afternoon and went back. And then the nightmare began of getting a diagnosis.
Yeah.
So
who do you see first?
So I went to the ENT first because I obviously thought it was a vertigo. She pretty much immediately said, well, I don't think it's benign positional vertigo because you're not showing the typical symptoms. So she didn't really know. Went to a regular doctor. He had no idea. All the blood work came back normal, nothing. And at this point, I'm still just dealing with basically dizziness and the fatigue mainly, right? And then some stomach obviously issues. And then eventually about 2 weeks in, I'm getting some more neurological symptoms. Now I got tingling in my fingers, tingling in my legs feel real heavy and like I almost couldn't move them type of thing. So now I'm thinking, well, maybe I should see a neurologist. So as most people know, so, getting in with a neurologist kind of
what
pain.
Are you thinking, I guess, maybe privately, like, are you diagnosing yourself at this point, or are you getting pretty scared? Because
not quite yet. Okay. I mean, obviously, if you grow up being a gymnast, you have a pretty good body awareness, so you know when something's wrong. And I just couldn't put my finger on it. I knew something was seriously wrong. I just didn't know what. And then one of the regular doctors kind of tried to put it down as, okay, you're just stressed out, anxiety type of thing, and you know how that goes. And you know, I'm thinking to myself, there's no way I'm stressed out. Lily had just changed job from a really high stress environment to more mellow things. Like, yeah, there was nothing stressful about any of this.
yeah.
And yeah, don't try to sell me the I'm stressed out
right
excuse. So I'm chasing basically a diagnosis by myself, just trying to figure out which doctor to hit first. So then I noticed some heart rate issues from high to low, out of nowhere, palpitations, really extreme low heart rate. I mean, I always run low, but it was lower than low. So then I saw a cardiologist. He couldn't find anything. And then eventually ended up with a neurologist, and he just basically said, well, you just got post-viral symptom. Okay, yeah. What does that mean, really?
Yeah.
It just puts you on some steroids, and you should be good to go. And
so are you pretty much, during all this, are you able to at least try to stay active, or are you just kind of...
No, at that point, I was just...
couldn't really function the way you...
Pretty much suffering through work.
Okay.
For the lack of having an actual diagnosis, and someone actually sending me home sick. It's like, okay, nothing's wrong with you. You got to work. So basically suffering through 8 hours of work, coming home, and pretty much just passing out on the couch. Bad. I couldn't... In between doing the work, just to not fall apart, I took some small walks. I tried to stay, and it made me feel better, which was very interesting.
Yeah.
So every time I felt like my legs were about to just not move or function, just went on a walk and I immediately felt better. I could never put a finger on that either.
I'm looking at your son over here. He's looking about like he's around 11 years old, if I had to guess. How
he's
old?
13.
13. Okay, so he was very, very young when all this is going on.
He was very young, yeah. And we just had another, so he's got a 17-month younger sister, so she was a toddler at that
good
time.
Good grief.
So, okay. Yeah, so we basically had a toddler, then a 3-year-old, yeah, and then had some other issues with some teenage kids, too. And so, yeah.
Yeah.
It was a
plenty
lot.
Plenty on your plate, yeah.
Yeah, and then you just try to run to these doctors and you're not getting any answers.
Yeah. Okay. So when did you get some answers?
8 months later.
8 months.
And that was after, and that was basically just by accident, because with all the back pain, I saw an ortho, and he saw some stuff in my neck where he wanted to do surgery. Mm-hmm. And so almost had neck surgery for nothing.
Oh.
But his last step was, okay, get an EMG done by a neurologist. And he gave me a list, but at that point, 8 months in, the kind of narrowed a little bit down what it maybe could be. So found me a specialist in the Guillain-Barré CIDP area to do the EMG.
So is CIDP anywhere on the radar at this point? Had you even heard it yet?
No, Guillain-Barré was on the radar, uh-huh. but kind of like, I'm not sure, okay. right? Because it wasn't, maybe I should preempt it, but most people that come down with Guillain-Barré, it hits them so bad they're actually paralyzed.
Okay.
Temporarily. The nerves are shut down and you can't even move. People are on the ventilator for a month at a time before they recover. So since I never got there, mm-hmm. and then also people said, well, most people lose their reflexes. I never did,
mm-hmm.
which is an abnormality too, which probably didn't help my case for yeah. most doctors either. So then eventually I end up with this neurologist, and she does that EMG, and she looks at it, and then EMG, and she did a nerve conduction study as well, which basically just shows how long it takes from point A on a nerve to go to point B, that's longer, along the nerve line,
yeah.
and then compares it with an average. And then she just looks at it like, yeah, I think there's something wrong with your neck. You have something else going on. Didn't want to spit out a diagnosis yet until she ran a few other tests. But after a few more tests, including a spinal tap, and we just finally landed on Guillain-Barré at the time,
uh-huh.
which obviously was changed later to CIDP. So yeah, 8 months. And then at that point, I was already kind of on the upswing, so it was kind of too late to really do any treatments.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's just a matter of time of sitting out and wait until I get mostly better.
Okay. So I'm wondering how scared you are at this point, because I would think... Here's why I asked this question. Like, before I got to know you, but I was seeing you in here all the time, seeing you working with the PTs, my instincts were that you were either suffering from MS or maybe ALS.
Mm-hmm.
And thank goodness you're not. But did those things ever cross your mind?
Oh, no, they definitely did. And, you know, basically, CIDP is pretty much the peripheral brother of MS
okay.
to a certain degree. So, yeah, MS crossed my mind. ALS, I mean, there's all kinds of worse things that crossed yeah. my mind, too. And at one point or another, probably 3-4 months in, there's a lot of stuff I put in order just in case something happens,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you don't know what's going on. I'm thinking this is not getting any better. Like, mm-hmm. okay, make sure if something does happen to me, my wife knows where to find everything, right? And it's sad to say, but it was a scary time, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, that's dark. I mean, so many unknowns. I mean, I can only imagine how frustrating that must have been, not just for you, but also your wife. So, okay, so you've got a diagnosis. How did you internalize that? What was kind of your natural response? I mean...
Well, it was relief, because at that point it was Guillain-Barré, which... In the perfect world is, okay, you take a big hit and then you recover and you mm-hmm. just keep getting better, right? Which at that point in time, it looked that way.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, once I'm done deal, I'm on the uprise, I'm getting better, nothing to worry about anymore. Mm-hmm. Well, I was wrong.
Right? Yeah.
that was a modus of operandum at the time. So after that visit, I started to finally do more things again. So
okay.
I started to walk. Work my way up to finally be able to run a mile, maybe by December. So I got diagnosed I came down with the first symptoms in January of 2013. So then by December of 2013, I was able to run a mile.
Okay.
Obviously not where I wanted to be, but at least I could run a mile.
Yeah.
and then just worked off on there, then decided it was a good idea to encourage other people that came down with sickness that you can come back from mm-hmm. it, and decided, well, I always wanted to do a triathlon, so kind of worked my way into try to do a triathlon, which I eventually did in 2015, but it took me that long to get to that level.
Yeah.
So 2.5 years basically to get somewhat good enough in shape And that wasn't a great triathlon either. It was just winging it, basically, too. So, but I got it done. And kept that up for another year. And then at the end of 2016, had a real bad relapse.
Okay.
And that then spawned a CIDP diagnosis. And ever since, it's been more of a frequent flare-up cycle and continuous worsening of symptoms.
So since 16 it has been?
Yeah.
Okay. So what do these flare-ups look like?
They come with extreme fatigue, pain, you know, and before, about 2 years ago, the pain came and eventually went away.
Mm-hmm.
Since for about 2 years ago, the pain's been nonstop, 24/7, and the only thing, and we've tried plenty of medications, obviously. Tried 13 so far, and none of them have even touched it. But, you know, on the bright side of thing, the one thing that does work is working out.
Yeah.
And it doesn't work very long. It works during the workout. It might last another hour, but it does work.
Right.
So that obviously gives me a little extra motivation to actually do stuff because it helps with the pain.
No. I mean, look, it's amazing. I mean, I don't want to trivialize your condition and try to blur it into, you know, an injury that I had and overcame for the most part, but it was really bad and it was really painful for a long time. But when I couldn't do anything else, you know, what I hear you saying sounds very familiar. Like, I would come up here and I would get on the bike for 30 minutes and I could do that. And it would make all the pain go away while I was on the bike, and then for a little while afterwards. And I just wanted to do that as much as I possibly could because it took me out of kind of that dark, painful state that I knew was waiting on me. And then I just kind of was able to get back to where I was running. So I ran as much as I could for the same reasons. And, you know, it seems so simple, but I tell my wife, my kids, anybody who will listen, you know, when they're dealing with something, like, look, I know it seems counterintuitive, but you got to get up and start moving around, and you'll be amazed at how your body responds to that.
No, I totally agree with that. And I see it with a lot of people that have what I have that don't move.
Right.
And it's a night and day difference. I mean, I'm not saying I'm all that great or whatever, but once they start shutting down, it's downhill for me.
It is. I mean, it's... I think a sedentary lifestyle is the most deadly thing you can invite into your world, you know, and I've seen it with family members, but I've also just kind of heard it through that, through medical professionals, just talking about the dangers of just not moving. And so we're designed to move and to be active, and our bodies need that. So, all right. So when did you discover CrossFit along the way?
So it was kind of stumbled into. So I was, you know, forgot to mention it earlier. When I came to the U.S., I kind of picked up gymnastics again as an adult. So I've been, did that a little bit in my 30s, kind of dropped when the kids came along, got too busy.
Mm-hmm.
Picked it back up probably in 18, 19 for a little bit. And obviously 20 came around, everything shut down. So I kind of got to the wayside, but I did pick up skating again during that time.
Yeah.
And then 21, still doing gymnastics. And then when I lost my legs, or my left leg went out, that was about Thanksgiving of 22.
Mm-hmm.
And then I needed, obviously, if you can't feel your leg, anything gymnastics becomes a little more convoluted. You can't do floor, all, you know, every gymnastics apparatus has a dismount. Can't feel your leg at this moment's not a good option.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, okay, what I can do. You know, I've heard CrossFit kind of tapered around a little bit. I've even tried an open before just to see what I, you know, what can a gymnast do. Found out real bad that really, yeah, gymnasts are strong, but they're not CrossFit strong.
Right.
So like, okay, what I can do. So I looked into CrossFit and saw that they have an adapter. So yeah, this is perfect.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got at least foundation here and try to see that. And then while trying to get the classification done for the adaptive division, so you had to do this physical exam or whatever, and trying to find a doctor to do that for me was kind of a pain. Until someone pointed out that Sarah might be able to do that for me. So Sarah. And then after talking that, and kind of all went from there, like, and she agreed that functional fitness is great for me, especially overcoming a numb leg, which then eventually turned into two numb legs, and it's been a godsend, basically.
Yeah.
I mean, the sheer progress I made with Sarah within a few weeks was ridiculously good.
I mean, I remember you coming in here with braces on your arms.
Yeah, I was wearing, I had two crutches.
To get around.
Yeah. Because I did not trust my leg. I mean, I was wiping out at home left and right because it was constantly falling. Didn't trust my leg at all. I mean, it was working, but if you can't feel it, you just don't trust it.
And yeah.
Fell down the stairs twice, so obviously confidence level was really low. And then just say, I got me a spot. Okay, you just need to work with it. And get it, and she had me going real quick.
So, what was her? Was she familiar with CIDP at all?
I think she knew about it, but she wasn't super familiar. But she obviously has a way of, okay, we know your leg's working. We just need to get your body to acknowledge that it's still there and can work. So she started me off with real small little things just to make my brain trust my leg without feeling my leg. Now, obviously, you can feel above a leg, so there's other points of contact that help a little bit.
Yeah.
I just wasn't trusting any of that. And so she just got me real quick to, okay, yeah, you can do things still.
Yeah.
You can squat. You can walk. You know, drop the crutch.
Yeah. What must that have felt like when you started to
It was great. It was great. And, you know, I mean, I still use it on sometimes, you know, some bad days I use it.
Yeah.
If I go in big crowds, I use it just because I just don't, it's too risky to get knocked over without knowing that you get knocked over.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was liberating.
Tell me a little bit about the adaptive athlete kind of community. And you said you kind of came upon it throughout looking at CrossFit. But, you know, I think for the most part, the people here in this CrossFit community probably don't know much about it.
Well, no, I agree. And then, so it's the adaptive. Last year, CrossFit ran their own adaptive, and then after last year, they got rid of it and handed it over to Real World, which has been doing this for, I think, at least 10 years, not longer. And they got a better handle on it. They also got better classifications of what the categories are. Like, last year, CrossFit, they had a catch-all, what they called multi-extremity category, which I fell into.
Yeah.
Where Reward has more of a specific neuromuscular division, and they even subcategorize that in a minor, moderate, and major, and I fall in a moderate category. But it's more aimed towards your MS people, CIDP, CP people, more in that regard versus just, okay, limb deficiencies that, you know, have categories for that, not just all lumped together into one category, which was a little challenging there last year. So I think Reward at this point has a total of 15 categories per gender, so a total of 30. Anything from 1 point of contact, 2 point, intellectual, short stature, vision. Can't even know what all. So it's very extensive.
Okay.
And they do a pretty good job classifying the people in the right category. And if they see after a competition season where maybe a moderate is way too high performing, they're probably going to put them in minor next year or something. You know, they adjust along the way to make it fair for the most part.
Yeah.
I think it's always going to be totally fair because obviously the in a neuromuscular, my CIDP is totally different than someone else's CIDP, than someone else, MS and all that stuff. So it's not always the exact same, but, you know, try to make it as fair as possible.
Right. So how many, you just came out of the Open and for adaptive athletes. I remember being up here a couple of times when you were doing your workouts. How many people are entered kind of in that little segment that,
so it depends on category. So my neuromusculars are roughly about 30 to 35 people for each category.
Okay.
Where I think, see, some of the wheelchair categories are a little, lot heavier. Maybe 60 to 70 people, I think. So, you know, but my category was 33 people. We started off with 33 people.
Just in the U.S.?
No, or, that's worldwide.
Worldwide. Oh, okay. Yeah. Got it.
And think four dropped out along the way, so we ended up with 29 on the scoreboard. They're still finalizing. Our scoreboard won't be final until Monday.
Okay.
They did pretty deep cleanup this week, so I think they're almost done. And based on our leaderboard right now, I'm 17th.
Oh, nice.
And top 20 make it to semis. So we skip quarters, we go straight to semis.
Oh, nice. Congrats. Good job.
Thank you. So hopefully, yeah, it's not official yet, but it looks good so far.
So what was the worst part for you during the Open?
The first workout with the burpees.
Yeah.
But if you can't feel your legs, burpees are just a nightmare.
Yeah.
Just getting up out of that position is just horrible.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, not saying the thrusters were much better, but it wasn't as many of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the burpees just absolutely killed me.
So does some of the gymnastic stuff we do in here, I mean, do you respond to that pretty well just based on your background?
I do. Yeah. I mean, obviously, kipping pull-ups and that kind of stuff come easy. Obviously, I could lose some weight and make it easier, but the movements are there. If I were actually getting handstand walks, that would be really nice. The sad thing is we'll probably never get them.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of newer musculars that can't go upside down at all. So they probably will never program me on any of the competitions.
Right.
So while I like to do handstands, I'll probably never see it in a competition.
Yeah. Well, I got nothing keeping me from doing handstands, and I just can't do them. Actually, I tried the other day. We had a handstand walks in the workout, and I just decided to work on them, kind of throw the whole stimulus out the window and see how I could do. And I actually did a lot better than I thought, but I was so sore. It was like a new kind of sore that I have not experienced in here yet from doing all those handstand walks the next day. And it lasted for, man, at least 3 days. So
it works on different muscles.
It sure does.
I think a lot of CrossFitters kind of neglect the basics of the actual handstand. And what I see a lot is people just throwing kind of, it's more like a controlled fall. Instead of actually working on your handstand form first and then try to walk.
Yeah, that's probably, I would fall into that category. Just, I was telling Matt Wagner, he was the coach that day, kind of helping me out. And I said, most of the times I just get upside down and I just kind of think, all right, now what do I do? Because I feel like if I move my hands 1 inch, I'm falling down. So I think the best thing for me to do is not think about it and just get up and just start moving as fast as I can. And that's when I usually saw it working the best.
Actually, a good trick on that is to open your shoulders more.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, because then it actually gives you more lean in the right direction. It's kind of like walking.
Right? Yeah.
If you walk, you lean a little bit forward to move faster, right? You open your shoulders, you get a more of a lean.
Makes sense.
Next time.
I'll try it, yeah. I can use all the help I can get. So what is the adaptive athlete community like? I mean, it's such a specifically like in where you fall, 33 people around the world, seems like that would be pretty easy for you guys to connect or be in some level of community. Is that where it is? It is
to a certain degree. So last year after the CrossFit opened, and it was obviously still a regular VWAT competition, and when we went through the semifinals, we kind of created this Instagram group chat with everyone that was competing last year. So we have these people of, I think we're 9 or 10 now.
Yeah.
It's a little small chat group, which is all encourage each other, share stuff. And so we're just chit-chatting along, and it's like real great and encouraging. It's like there's no really putting anyone down. It's all encouraging.
Yeah.
For the most part, I'm not saying there are some black sheep out there, but for the most part, it's very, very encouraging and supportive of each other.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I know that's got to be, I don't know, that would bring me a lot of comfort. People out there that understand what you're dealing with.
Yeah,
and I can only imagine, like, during that period where it was just doctor after doctor, test after test, medication after medication, and nothing's turning up. It's got to be kind of a lonely feeling at that point.
It is for sure. And then, you know, and then when you come out of it, not knowing anybody that's in a similar position, trying to push through this stuff, there's very few people out there that go to the extremes of keep pushing.
Yeah.
And I found some of those people. It's very encouraging to see. And we've all got our lows, we've all got our highs.
Sure.
But frankly, I'm going to have to say this. Most people do not understand what it means to deal with a chronic disease.
Mm-hmm. Really. Yeah.
And training with a chronic disease is just a whole different level. Quite frankly, those days, I just can't do anything.
Yeah.
And it's something you got to account for in your training, right? Now, if you have a training plan, okay, I should be doing this today, and I can't.
Yeah.
Then when are you doing?
What is the goal? What do you try to... What kind of schedule do you try to stay on as best you can?
I do. Right now, I got a programming for 3, and I got myself... Last year was kind of just winging it based on real watts, standard programming. Mm-hmm. That's for everybody. But I found myself neglecting the stuff I should be working on.
Yeah.
Yeah, who doesn't, right?
Right, right, yeah.
So I bit the bullet earlier this year and got me an actual real coach, so... And then she focuses on all my weaknesses, obviously.
Yeah.
So goal is 3 workouts a week. If I have extra time, I throw in some extra supportive stuff or just some cardio just to supplement. But 3 full workouts a week.
So how do you feel right now relative to the last 11 years?
It's kind of... I'm better than I was when I first... I had the first symptoms, mm-hmm. obviously. Some things are worse. The pain's obviously worse right now, but I've kind of learned how to deal with it. Functionally, I'm definitely better than I was, for sure. Stronger. So I think I'm in a good spot. You know, I've learned how to deal with mentally. And one thing I forgot to mention earlier, in 2017, when I had my second relapse, I was dealing with some real bad anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out, you know, some of it was due to, okay, well, now chronic, obviously dealing with that. But the other thing is that apparently the brain misinterprets the bad signals it gets from a nurse and
uh-huh.
turns it into anxiety because it doesn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So that took me a while to figure that out and deal with that. Got that fixed with neurofeedback, which is an amazing tool. By the way,
interesting.
So yeah, kind of reprograms your brain. It worked wonders, but yeah, that was a challenge too, because that was basically, I couldn't get myself anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Or was that my wife had to take me everywhere because I was so bad with anxiety that I just didn't want to go anywhere.
Wow.
So that's obviously gone. So I'm coping very well on my own. I mean, pretty much independent right now, even besides the legs, I can drive. I can do anything I want.
Still working? Still working.
Yeah. Thankfully, I'm remote. Mm-hmm. I don't know how it would be if I actually had to go to the office every day.
Yeah.
But that was obviously godsend, and it's working great.
That's great. So what is kind of the quality of life outlook from here moving forward? I mean, are the doctors able to set any kind of expectation for you?
We don't know, because I don't fall into the typical categories.
Yeah.
Most CIDP people, they get on what's called IVIG treatment, which is basically just a bunch of blood plasma from donors combined kind of medication that keeps them at bay. That doesn't work for me.
Mm-hmm.
So we've tried a different option last year with an infusion in October. The mean time for that one to kick in is 6 months, can take up to 12 months, so hasn't done anything, so we don't know.
Yeah.
Chances are might not do anything. So we're kind of just managing day by day and see how bad it gets or not, or just stay steady.
Yeah.
So interesting, I kicked myself a couple of times into remission by myself without medication, which is unusual too.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that might kick back in. Don't know.
Yeah.
I think the exercise, for the most part, is what keeps it at bay right
now.
I can probably guarantee you, if I were to stop doing everything I'm doing right now, I'd probably go downhill real quick.
Yeah. Any research out there going on right now that gives you any kind of hope or optimism as far as a cure or just management of it beyond?
I think there's one medication on the radar that might show some hope, that something could be released later this year that came out with a new variant of the IVIG, which we don't think is an option because it's still the same category, just how it's administered is a little different. So that other medication, I mean, it's not a new medication, it's just it's an older medication just showing effects for CIDP too.
Yeah.
So once that's approved, we're probably going to try that after we passed the waiting period to see if this last infusion did anything.
Well, you know, this is an amazing story, and you know, a lot of people, myself included, around here, we deal with a lot of nagging stuff, and especially kind of when you get up in your 40s and 50s, like a lot of us are, that come here. And I can privately, on the bad days, start to wonder if this is something that I need to keep doing. and hearing you talk about it really kind of turns that on its head. So,
you know, one thing, when you first came out with Are You Sore Yet, my immediate thought is, I'm actually happy when I am sore. And, you know, the reason is, when I'm sore, I don't feel my other pain as bad.
That's awesome.
So it's a different pain.
Yeah.
And it just gives me relief from the other. So, yeah, I actually prefer to be sore just to get some sort of distraction from the other stuff.
Man, that makes a lot of sense. Yeah, we should rejoice in the soreness for sure. No, that's great. Marcus has always been an encouragement to the podcast. I know you're a loyal listener. You've even mentioned the fact that you like some of the music that I play.
Yeah.
There's not many people that say that around here.
I'm a music enthusiast. I collect a lot of records, probably too many for my wife's taste, but yeah.
Who are you listening to now?
My main band is Depeche Mode.
Yeah.
It's always been since
guys.
The 80s. So
yeah.
I mean, they've been around for over 40 years now, and they're still kicking it.
That's great. Well, Sarah Brown, she sounds like she's been a real blessing to you.
Yeah, for sure.
And she certainly has to me and to my family. I can't say enough about her. She was on the second Are You Sore podcast. I remember bringing up a story about my older brother, who's dealt with a lot of surgeries, a lot of orthopedic injuries from his football days. I kind of took her down the laundry list of surgeries and everything that he's had, and asked her, like, is this someone that is cut out for CrossFit? And I remember she said, CrossFit is for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And when she said that back then, I kind of sort of believed her, you know, but I wasn't completely sold. And now, you know, obviously talking to you, seeing you in here, seeing the work that she's done with you and how you've made it.
No,
I totally
agree.
It's so true.
And at no point in time did I ever feel like I wasn't able. I mean, Sarah always pretty much knew I was going to be able to do this.
Yeah.
Whatever she's going to throw at me, she knew I was going to be able to do it, which is great.
Yeah. She never wavers in what she thinks you're capable of, you know? And that's, I think, one of the great things about her, you know, is she delivers that confidence in you that she believes that what she's saying and what she's telling you to do. And by her doing that, it makes you believe that you can do it too.
So. I totally agree. And then the other thing she does too, which is great, which some people may or may not like, is, and I was talking to someone the other day, how we sometimes can take our sickness, illnesses to come up with excuses how not to do something.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I have this limitation. I can't really do this. So I'd be the first one who's like, well, don't be talking nonsense right now. Like, okay, she'll kick you in gear, right?
Oh,
right from the get, like, okay, don't use your sickness as an excuse not to do stuff,
right.
Which is great, which I love.
Yeah.
I might not want to hear it at the time, but it's still probably what you need.
Yeah.
So, you know, I told the person I'm talking to, is like, my PT is not going to let me get away with it.
No, she's not. That's awesome. Well, Marcus, kind of as we think about wrapping up, like, what goals do you have for yourself? I mean, you've really probably, if I had to guess, exceeded the expectations of your physicians and most of the people out there that are knowledgeable about this condition just because of how you've taken this head on. But I know that there's probably more that you want to do and while you still can. So anything in particular that you kind of want to achieve?
Yeah, obviously staying competitive and maybe eventually making it to finals. I don't see that's happening this year, looking at the field. And, you know, the other problem I'm dealing with right now is, you know, you mentioned age group earlier.
Yeah.
I am up against people who are by average 20 years younger than
me.
Oh,
gosh, so. Yeah. You don't have the so luxury
I'm,
of...
I'm about to turn 54, and I'm dealing with a lot of 20-somethings, and the average age is 34. So
listen, you showed me that video the other day, and I'm not trying to... I don't know this guy. I don't know what he's dealing with, but when you showed it to me, you said he is supposed to be doing pull-ups and getting his chin over the bar. And this guy was not getting anywhere close to that. And he had a judge standing there that was counting every one of them. So
there's some of that. That's a big pet peeve of mine, obviously coming from a gymnastics background. And, most people know that gymnastics judging is pretty tough for the most part. So I try not to take shortcuts on my movements. Obviously, Sarah won't let me get away with it anyway. She judges most of my workouts. I just think people should treat it as such as a real competition and not just submit. This guy did get his score adjusted, though I don't think they adjusted as they should, but he did get downgraded. And rightfully so. And, if you can't read the rule book, and we've seen other people where, and everyone knows if you video, you're supposed to be in the full frame, and then they're not in the frame, kind of still like, okay, check your video before you submit. It's just small stuff.
Sure.
So, but yeah, I mean, there's some of that. And then last year during the CrossFit Open, I know there was one guy that ended up in 10th place that did everything scaled. And they never adjusted any of his scores.
Huh.
So, that's that. It's frustrating, right? But, just got to deal with it. It's a competition. There's going to be some stuff you just have to suck up and go through. So, we'll see how it turns out. I mean, top 10 make it to finals. People have to accept the invitation. There's a lot of international people. Mm-hmm. I don't know if everyone wants to come to San Antonio. Maybe there's a small chance.
Mm-hmm.
But, I'm not counting on it. I'll do my best, obviously.
Yeah.
But
be ready.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Marcus, this is great. You've been an encouragement to me and everybody out there who doesn't know him, maybe sees him around. I recommend you come introduce yourself and get to know him more, because this is an amazing story and should give us all a little kick in the pants at the very least. So I appreciate you coming up to me and having this idea, because this is really good content. We mess around a lot in here, but I do also want to find ways to deliver kind of important messages and do that through really, really interesting people. And you're certainly one of them.
No, I appreciate it. And I kind of wanted to get the word out, because I do realize that most people just probably, they're just not exposed to adapters and have no idea what it's really about. They probably heard about it, but they really don't know what does it really mean.
Yeah, yeah.
And, quite frankly, I think there could be a lot of people out there that could get into the adaptive that just never heard of it and therefore never try it.
Yeah. Well, I hope that somehow this interview can reach those people. We're going to do the best we can to get it out there. And I would encourage you guys to share with anybody that might be dealing with some kind of limiting condition in any capacity, because you never know. But what we do know is that staying active and just trusting your body to be resilient, it works, and it's going to make you feel better, and it can do things that you didn't think you can do anymore. So
movement is medicine.
Movement is medicine. Motion is lotion.
That's
another Sarah Brown. I might put that on my gravestone one of these days. All right, Marcus. Thanks again.
Thanks,
Enjoyed
Paul.
Having you. Have a good one.
You too.
Marcus, man, what a story. So glad to get him in here and learn more about that. I hope y'all enjoyed that as much as I did, and that you are at least as encouraged as I am, because he just held nothing back, and I really appreciate just how authentic he was during that conversation, and I really hope that this word gets out to a lot of people out there that maybe aren't sure what they're capable of anymore, because I think that they'll draw a lot from Marcus and his story. So really enjoyed that one. We have got the Future Birds. They were the soundtrack to my week at the Masters earlier this week. They're going to take us out today. You guys have a great rest of the week. Give it your best and a little bit more. We'll see you next time.